Good morning. Colombia has too much crime. Nobody here disputes that. I've been on the road for a couple of weeks. I've been out of Colombia. But you know, hotels have Wi-Fi. And I've got an iPhone 5, which my wife was tempted to throw away. But I was disappointed to follow the media the last 2 weeks. I was disappointed by the contentiousness, by the media coverage, which I would view as spectacular. I read about the sheriff taking over the Columbia Police Department. I read that Boone County is now the most dangerous county in Missouri. And I read about calls for Chief Burton to be fired. You know, we're better than this. But being away from Columbia has allowed me time for reflection and analysis. So over the next hour or so, I'm going to be frank, and I'm prepared for our criticism and backlash. I'm going to speak as honestly and openly as I can. And some of you are not going to like what I have to say. Let me start, but before we get into analysis of crime, we can never dismiss the personal nature and the personal devastation that crime inflicts on individuals and families. You know, you hear about a shots fired incident. You think that, well, somebody may be in a hospital, somebody may be in a morgue. And you think about the devastated family that is involved with that. We think about families, we think about mothers burying their sons, and that should never happen. We think about empty chairs at Christmas dinner, empty chairs at Thanksgiving dinner, empty chairs on Mother's Day. So it's very personal. The second victim is the person who pulled the trigger, because that person is the target of the Columbia Police Department. That person is going to be arrested, and it's going to be in the criminal justice system, and will be a felon for the rest of his life. And the third victim is the community. You know, we all understand that safety, crime prevention, police protection is a core, primal function of local government. That's what citizens expect from us. We understand that. That's what we expect of our staff. But it's the number one priority that citizens mention every time we do a citizen survey: crime prevention and police protection. Crime's very personal. You know, when you speak to somebody who's been a victim of a property crime, they feel violated permanently. You think of the families that are destroyed. But I want to take a step back. Let's view this as a problem. This is a problem. So that's collectively problem solve. Let's do it together. Let's analyze crime. Let's measure it. And let's come together for solutions. So I'm going to present my take on this. You know, I'm one of seven members of the City Council. I have no legislative authority to enact any of the six things I'm going to mention, but I'm going to encourage them. Now, you know, been a lot of publicity about media coverage between heads of law enforcement agencies. I have no influence over other agencies. There's three agencies in Columbia. There's the University Police Department. There's the Boone County Sheriff. And then there's the Columbia Police Department. And the City Council has no jurisdiction over two of the three. Now, interestingly, there is a lot of cooperation at the ground level in these departments. I am told that the arrests of an alleged perpetrator of that drug deal gone bad was accomplished through cooperation of deputies from the Boone County Sheriff's Department and officers from the Columbia Police Department. And that's the kind of cooperation that we citizens, collectively, all of us, we expect, we want. I've used the word demand, you know, but let me, I think the word expect is a better word. So, you know, we demean our efforts with a media war. You know, we need to stop bickering. We need to stop the turf battles. We need to stop unsubstantiated claims. We need to stop posturing. We're capable of doing that. And so I think each of us as citizens of Boone County want to see cooperation, not just at the boots on the ground level. We want to see it at the top. We want to see the heads of our law enforcement agencies meeting regularly. We want to see them communicating. Yeah, they have some different philosophies about law enforcement, and that's fine, but we respect those different philosophies. But at the end of the day, the community is best served when there is cooperation from the law enforcement agencies top to bottom. Now, the next initiative, let's speak the same language. Crime is emotional, but let's take a step back. Let's look at it. Let's analyze it. You know, we have a third party that measures crime, FBI. They publish their uniform crime report every year of crime across the country. It's publicly available. It's on the internet. The Bureau of Justice publishes public information about staffing levels of local law enforcement agencies. This stuff is available, so let's take a look at it. Let's see what we're dealing with. So let's take a dispassionate step back and look at where we are with crime in Columbia. This is a 28-year history of crime in Columbia. 1985, we had 64,000 people in Columbia. In 1990, we had about 75,000 people in Columbia. In 2000, we had 84,000 people in Columbia. This graph shows in the blue line the number of violent crimes in that calendar year per capita. Divide the total number by the number of citizens. This is the number of crimes, violent crimes, reported to the national database since 1985. The red or orange line, you know, I just created a moving average to try to smooth out the trend lines. This is just a 3-year trailing moving average to try to help identify trends. You know, we remember the good old days, right? The good old days were not so good in the early 90s. We had more violent crime in the early 90s. We had more homicides in the early 90s. The trend line is flattened out. I can't really identify, and I'm unwilling to draw a trend over the last 5 or 10 years. You know, 2012 was down. It was down below the 3-year trend line. I went ahead and put in the first 6 months of this year and basically annualized it. And the violent crime numbers in Columbia in 2013 are still on the trend line. There is no trend. This is too much crime. I am not minimizing the fact that these numbers are not spiking. This is too much crime. But these are the facts. Robbery accounts for about 30% of violent crime. Numbers don't go back to 1985. We're sneaking back up to the numbers we had 20 years ago. Again, the blue represents each yearly statistic, and the red represents a three-year moving average. 60% of violent crime is assault. Again, you can see the early 90s were a troubling time. Maybe a little decline in the trend line over the last two or three years. And you see the spike in 2008 and the drop in 2009. And that's why I try to smooth these trend lines out, because I can't account for that. There is nothing as terrible as forcible rape or homicide. These numbers go back to 1985. The numbers of rapes in Columbia have been in the 20 to 50 range annually. I personally can't really identify a trend line, a spike in the early 90s or mid-90s, a drop. Are we seeing the start of a new trend line? Can't answer that question. Homicide, we've had four homicides this year. You know, in 1994, we had 75,000 people living in Columbia. We had nine homicides in 1994, nine. In 2000, we had 84,000 people living in Columbia. We had nine homicides in 2000. Sadly, this is a reflection of the human condition. You know, we've always had crime. I submit crime is a problem now, that it was a problem then, and I submit that as this analysis goes on, we must conclude that crime will always be a problem. Property crime. I want to mention that the violent crime statistics include criminal homicide, forcible rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. Property crimes include burglary, larceny, motor vehicle theft, and arson. I don't think any of this number, this chart really surprised me, and it probably surprised most people in the room. I have no explanation for the fact that property crime has declined actually rather dramatically over the last 20 years. Burglary is actually down 60%. This may have to do with interdiction efforts by the law enforcement agencies, an awareness by the public at large, efforts to protect neighborhoods during spring breaks, vacations. There's been a lot of community activity on this part to eliminate so-called crimes of opportunity. But I can't and won't try to explain this except to say that property crime in the city of Columbia is dramatically lower. I want to do some comps now. Who else has this problem? Are we the only city in Columbia that has this problem? A city in the United States has this problem. Now, I hate to compare ourselves to St. Louis and Kansas City, because they're among the highest crime incident cities in the United States. I think we all know that. This is last year's data, last year's number. These are the five cities. The 2012 FBI Uniform Crime Report only shows cities over 100,000. So these are the only five we can get from last year. We are substantially lower than Springfield, which has 160,000 people. We're basically same ballpark as Independence, Missouri, which has a little over 100,000 people. I wanted to look to comparable cities in Missouri, and I selected smaller towns with colleges in Missouri. This is 2011 data. I couldn't find 2012 data. You know, among these cities, according to the FBI, the numbers, the difference is not great, but this is how we stack up against Cape Girardeau, Jeff City, Springfield, and Kirksville. And I think these numbers surprise a lot of people. The point here is that crime is everywhere. This is not just our problem. This is a national problem. It's a problem in every community across this country. We are not alone in this problem. I wanted to compare some SEC communities. You know, we're kind of in the middle. This is 2011 data. You know, again, 2012, we were 4.3. But again, you know, ballpark, you know, Gainesville, Knoxville have higher crime rates than Columbia. Just another basket of Midwestern cities might be surprising to people. Des Moines has a couple hundred thousand people. Topeka sounds like a nice, quiet, peaceful town. Even Davenport, Iowa. You know, we all have the same problem. Baton Rouge, well, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. I've heard numbers that, you know, I think all of us empirically or all of us intuitively understand that we are becoming, far worse, an armed society. We'll talk some more about that. We're becoming an armed society. I mean, look at Hollywood culture, look at the music culture, look at the gangsta rap culture, look at it. Look at the video games. I was watching my 12-year-old grandson 2 days ago play a video game. I don't know what the name of it was. It was a very violent video game where he's shooting people. You know, we are evolving into a higher level of gun violence throughout our country. It is a fact of life. If you look at the number of violent crimes in Columbia that involve the use of guns, you know, it sort of looked like there was a trend line going up, which is sort of what we intuitively believe, that there's more gun violence in Columbia. But the first 6 months of 2013, you know, sort of reverted to the mean. I think that I can't draw any conclusions from this other than what we already know, that we are an armed society. Now, this slide here, I think this reflects a fact that is probably the most disturbing thing that we see in Columbia. The shots fired incidents. Get a report in the news, shots fired at a pizza parlor on 10th and Broadway, right under a video camera, on 9th Street, Providence Road in I-70. I mean, we get these reports all the time. And the numbers indicate that we have a shots fired incident about every 6 days in Columbia. And the numbers indicate, you know, it's not new. These perpetrators have, by and large, been arrested. They've abandoned cars. They've done their crimes under video cameras. They, by and large, have been arrested by the CPD. By and large, they've not had previous criminal backgrounds to warrant search warrants, probable cause. You know, back in 2008, 2009, 2010, it sort of appears that that was the start of what we're seeing in Columbia. And this is what we have right now. And again, I believe this is a reflection of an armed society. I'm going to have a lot more to say about this later, but this is the slide I want you to keep embedded in the back of your mind. For the 3 years, we're getting a shots fired incident every 6 days in Columbia. We spend a lot of time on this. How big should our police force be? That, by and large, is a community decision. It's a decision the city council makes based on a recommendation from the city manager, but it's a decision made by the community at large. How many police officers do you think we need? I don't know if I know the answer to that question. I know how many we have, and I know how many other towns have. Now, I did not include University Police Department in those numbers. We have positions, funding for 160. And I think we're going to see the city manager propose 165, 163, 165 in the next budget cycle. The University Police Department has 35 patrol officers, I believe. Now, should we count them? Well, I don't, and I tell you why I don't. Their job, I mean, they do traffic enforcement. I know they do traffic enforcement. They are responsible for security on campus. They have a lot of work to do. It's their responsibility to make sure that campus is safe. They have to have a safe campus. But 3/4 of the students don't live on campus. They live out in the community. And they are under the arm of the Columbia Police Department. All of the faculty virtually live off campus. And they are the responsibility of the Columbia Police Department. All of the downtown area, all the college bars, the hangouts, they are the responsibility of the Columbia Police Department. We don't expect the University Police Department to deal with gang violence. We don't expect the Columbia Police Department to be involved in violence in other parts of the community. They don't have the staffing to do that. So for that reason, I've chosen to only include municipal police officers in this comparison. And as you see, we're about 1.45 police officers per 1,000. 10 years ago, we were 1.59. We've dropped our per capita police force by 10% in the last 10 or 12 years. Think about that. We've dropped it by 10 or 12%. I'm going to talk about why. But we have fewer police officers per capita than we did 12 years ago. The national average, 2.2. You might see 2.3. That number is skewed by the fact that cities with a lot of crime problems have a lot of police officers. You know, Washington, D.C. has 6 police officers per 1,000 citizens, and they still can't control their crime. The large cities, you know, it's kind of a different matter. But bottom line, as we compare this here, we, in my opinion, have an undersized police department. Again, compare it to some other Missouri cities, Springfield. Springfield has a higher crime rate. Jeff City is a little higher. They have more police officers per 1,000 citizens. We'll talk about that some more. Let's go back to that slide about shots fired incidents. The fact that we're getting a shots fired incidents every 6 days. I'm speculating now. My speculation is that this is gang activity, that these are people running around, acting irresponsibly, and they're armed. And for that reason, if I have the authorization of the City Council tonight, and I expect to have that, I'll be naming a 13-member citizen task force to be co-moderated by Lauren Alzer and by Michael Trapp. They both are highly engaged, very smart, very bright people, who are totally committed to this process. And I believe we're lucky to have them driving this. I've given them wide berth in determining who's on. Let's talk about crime before we talk about the composition of crime. Again, this is from, there's a 100-page document produced by the FBI in 2011. You can Google it. It's about gang activity in the United States. 33,000 active gangs in the United States. 1.4 million gang members in the United States. Nationwide, responsible for violence. They're armed. We know that. Their culture is one of violence, retribution. They don't have fist fights. They shoot each other, shoot at each other. It's a culture that actively recruits young people. Look in the news stories, you know, about what's going on in Columbia, and you see this. So does Columbia have gangs? Well, what do you think? It's a rhetorical question. I've been briefed by the city manager and the chief of police about gang activity in Columbia, which is one reason I would recommend that the Boone County Sheriff meet with the Columbia Police Department, because I would like for him to be briefed, too. But gang activity is there. Our police department is on it with the resources they have. And I'm not going to, I'll leave it up to the police chief to say any more in follow-up as to any more he wants to add about that. But yes, we have gangs in Columbia. Based on a recommendation of across the community, I expect to name these 13 individuals to the Anti-Violence Task Force. It's a broad-based group. I've given wide berth to Michael Trapp and Lauren Alzer and representatives of the minority community, as well as people who just contacted me. But this has been put together by committee. It represents a broad-based look of at-risk youth. You'll see two operators of low-income day schools, daycare centers on this. You'll see a retired police officer on this. You'll see people who I believe have credibility in the at-risk population on this task force. You'll see a corporate CEO on this task force. Why would you put a corporate CEO on this task force? Jerry Taylor, CEO of MFA, in his previous life was a minority recruiter at another company. He, in his present position, is a champion of the Youth Empowerment Zone and helps fund Youth Empowerment Zone. I felt that it was important to have somebody on this task force who deals with employment, because I think all of us know that one of the problems that we face systemically in this country is the lack of attainable careers and jobs for at-risk population. The unemployment rate for black teenage males is 42%. So I put somebody on here that I think understands jobs, job creation, and actually employs a lot of people in the community. So it's a broad-based group. I think this is a group that will represent the community well, and I look forward to the 15 months that they will be in session, and they will be giving us a report in 15 months. Does that mean that nothing will happen in 15 months? I see it going something like this, and again, this is the Michael Trapp and Lauren Alzer show now, but I see it going something like this. A meeting where there is a presentation. The presentation may be from the Columbia Police Department advocating curfews, for example, or a presentation about gang interdiction. Or there may be a presentation from the Columbia Public Schools about early childhood education. There may be a presentation from the Columbia Public Schools about discipline. And that presentation will then be followed by interaction from the task force. And then I see each session allowing for community input, that there'll be a public session with each session. It's a community conversation, and we're going to solve this as a community, or we're going to fail as a community. So that is the start of this community conversation. The fourth point I want to make, and this, you know, I want to state a couple obvious facts. The city government at the top of the organization chart is the city council. There's seven of us. We're elected. We are responsible for decisions made in that organization chart below. The person who answers to us is the city manager. We can fire him. We can give him a raise. The chief of police responds to reports to the city manager. He doesn't report to reporters. He doesn't report to the newspaper. He doesn't report to the city council. He reports to the city manager. Now, a little historical perspective is in order, and I would refer a lot of people to, any of you, to Bob Roper's op-ed piece yesterday. The chief of police was hired in 2009. He was hired by a previous city manager for whom I have a lot of respect. He was hired after a broad-based community group interviewed applicants, and this broad-based group made this recommendation to hire as our police chief, Ken Burton. Now, I've been involved in hiring in other endeavors I've had in my life, and I'm not going to speak for this group, but I think we all know intuitively that you when you're making a hire, your organization makes a hire, you can hire from within. When you hire from within, you're validating direction, structure, you're validating everything. You may choose to hire from outside. You may have the best candidate just from the outside. It may be that simple. Or you may be seeking an agent of change. And I'll let that group speak for itself. But at any rate, if you take over as an agent of change, you're going to be dealing with people who were passed over for that job. And you're going to meet resistance. You may meet community resistance. And you may meet criticism. But from a historical perspective, that's how our police chief got here. Now, he answers to the city manager, who was hired 2 years ago, another outside choice. I'll say parenthetically, our police chief has had other job offers. I don't know how long he's going to, you know, he can retire anytime. Our city manager gets job offers every week. One of the best decisions the previous city council made is hiring our current city manager. He's an all-star. He has our confidence. He's the boss. So if you're looking for the chief administrative officer of the Columbia Police Department, it is Chief Burton, but no, it's really the city manager. And he knows who he's accountable for, and we know who we're accountable to. It is that simple. So as long as the police chief meets the expectations of the city manager, I expect him to be police chief as long as he wants. And as long as the city manager meets the expectations of the city council, I expect him to be city manager as long as he wants. Hey, you can recall me. You can get a new council. You can recall four of us. So if you want to fire the police chief, I suggest the pathway to do that would be to start the recall and start with me. Now, one of the things the city manager did shortly after arrival is to get an outside third-party review of the Columbia Police Department. It's the Anderson review. The Anderson review is very complimentary of the rank-and-file police officers. It reports that it states they are highly educated, highly motivated, well-trained. The Anderson report was very critical of the administrative structure of CPD. It called it near toxic. It made a recommendation for 14 steps to improve the administration in the Columbia Police Department. We are in the middle of that. It is the city council's expectation that the city manager complete that. It is the city manager's expectation that the police chief complete that task. Now I'm going to talk about money. It costs money to have police officers. We're going to try to simplify the math, because I think the best way to look at this is a police officer is $100,000 a year. Salary, benefits, retirement, the car he drives, the equipment he uses, the technology he uses. So each police officer is $100,000. Now, I'm going to talk about the headwinds we have. I'm going to talk about some of the reasons we have, in my opinion, an understaffed police department. You know, the pension deficit is boring. It's hard to understand. But across the country, not just in Columbia, across the country, it's my opinion that municipalities and states have made terrible financial decisions. They've made promises and commitments irresponsibly, promises and commitments that they cannot keep. We have done that. And because of that, we now in our we have $80 million at our disposal in our general fund. Forget about the solid waste. Forget about water and light. Think about the general fund. Half of that general fund goes to public safety. We are paying millions of dollars a year to chase these pension deficits. Millions of dollars a year we are paying, and we have to pay. These are promises. We have to pay these. And so what we're doing, when you think about it, is we are paying, we are taking our current tax dollars, and we're paying yesterday's employees. That money is not available to pay for today's employees and tomorrow's employees. And I will tell you this, that if we'd made different decisions 15, 20 years ago, again, you know, this, we're not alone here. If we'd made different decision, if we didn't have this pension plan hole to climb out of, the city manager could hire 40 police officers tomorrow. But he can't, because that money is not there. You know, Columbia has a tradition of supporting the social service agencies. You know, starting in 1982, we started funding a program called CARE, which helps employ underprivileged kids in the summertime. We funded the arts. We funded social services. Then you add those up, we fund, it's $1.5 million a year out of our general fund. Now, that's 15 cops. That's 15 police officers. But that's a commitment we've made. That's a Columbia culture. It's a Columbia tradition. I don't see that changing. A lot of communities do not make this commitment. We have, but that's a headwind. The third thing I'm going to talk about is funding priorities. Every year in budget, we have to try to figure out how to squeeze every dollar out of our budget. Again, each $100,000 is one police officer. So if we can save $100,000, we can hire a police officer. And these decisions are tough. Columbia Access Television. City managers proposed eliminating the $200,000 a year stipend. $200,000. It will be contentious. I don't know how that vote will turn out in the council. But if we continue to support Columbia Access Television, there are two Columbia police officers we will not have next year. That's the kind of decision we have to make. We'll talk about sales tax dependence. Our community funds its operating needs largely through sales tax. I'm not talking about water and light, utility bills, trash bills. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about ARC fees or the fees you pay to use the soccer fields. I'm talking about the money that pays the general administrative and public safety role of the City of Columbia. We have an $80 million general fund. Much of it's committed. Half of that comes from sales tax. Half of it comes from sales tax. Now, that's fine, except sales tax is volatile. You have a recession, you get less sales tax. People buy on Amazon.com, you don't get sales tax. And what we have, if you go back 12 years and you look at the average, the sales tax revenue per capita in 2002 dollars, inflation adjusted, we receive 15% less sales tax than we did 11 years ago, 15%. And that is the major funding source for our municipal government, for public safety. It's a reality. It's a reality we live in. More on that later. Let me go back. There are some media people who like to talk about Blind Boone. How many cops could we have hired if we didn't fix Blind Boone? Well, the answer is we could have hired 3 cops. We could have trained them for 6 months, and we could have employed them for 6 months, and then we'd let them go, because that's one-time money. There's no revenue stream here. So the $300,000 for Blind Boone is not the revenue stream you can depend on to fund public safety. And for those who are critics of Blind Boone, many of us view it as a community asset, a deteriorating asset, one that is worth completing. We stand by that decision. I will point out that when we had a public hearing on funding Blind Boone, nobody spoke in opposition. 0 speakers in opposition. So we stand by that decision, and I view that decision as totally irrelevant to the funding stream it's going to take to fix our staffing. So here's the problem. It's our problem. It's our decision. We get to decide this collectively. How many police officers do we want? Do we want to stay funded at 30% below the national average? We can do that. We can try to squeeze a cop here or two out of canceling Columbia Access TV. We can do that. But we're not going to get to a right-sized police department. It's not going to happen. So this is a collective decision we're going to have to make. How many police officers do we need? How many do we want? And are we willing to pay for it? The status quo is the status quo. We end up with an undersized police department with few there are few resources for gang management. You have cops not on the street. That infamous 10th and Broadway shots fired incident occurred on a night that there were no police officers downtown because of staffing. If you want school resource officers in the high school, we can't afford it right now. So the status quo is one option. Now, second option is reprioritize. There's probably 10% of the people that would like to see us cancel all social service funding. Quit funding the parks. Shut them down. Well, that's not going to happen. We know that. So that's not an option. It may make great talk radio, but it's not an option. All right, what are we willing to pay for? We have a sales tax-based funding mechanism that is not providing us, in my view, the number of police officers we need. You know, a couple of years ago, the chief said he needed 35 police officers. The CPOA mentioned a few months ago they needed 35 more police officers. All right, 35. If he gets to 165, 35 gets us to 200. 200 divided by 114, probably 15% below the national average if we do that. So if we add 35 police officers, we're better off. We have more police officers for patrol. We have more police officers for community, for neighborhood policing. We have more police officers for the public schools. We have more presence if we have 35 more police officers. 35 times 100,000. It's 3.5 million. We don't have 3.5 million. It's not there. So now we're coming to my proposal here. I, for me, the solution to crime in Columbia is not at the end of a finger. The solution to crime in Columbia is in the mirror. It's a choice. So I propose that the city of Columbia add 35 police officers. That's still 15% under the national average. That'll help with patrol, community policing, dedicated gang unit, presence on the street. How do we get $3.5 million? It's your choice. I propose that we put on the ballot for the citizens to decide a 20-cent increase in property tax to be dedicated to the police department. What does 20 cents mean? That's a 3% increase. Right now, only 6% of your property tax bill goes to the city, only 6%. Most of it goes, of course, to the Columbia Public Schools. Some of it goes to county, some of it goes to other taxing entities like the Columbia, like the Library Board. We get $7 million a year from our property tax. An increase of 20% of 20 cents would fund $3.5 million of police officers, 35 police officers. It would be a 3% increase in your personal property tax bill, a 3%. So it's a choice. I propose letting the people decide. Let's put it on the ballot. I believe we have too much crime in Columbia. I believe we have an incipient gang problem in Columbia, and I believe our police department is understaffed. So making Columbia safer, it's a choice. We can do this together, but we're going to have to pay for it. I'll entertain any questions. Well, we're going to have a sewer ballot in November. Maybe we can get it on by November. That becomes a legal and administrative issue. If they can put it on the ballot in the November election, great. Let's do it. Let's find out what people want. Any other questions?
Mr. Mayor, during Saturday's Brandon Coleman march, a number of demonstrators felt that Coleman's death and the handling thereof stemmed from problems with race relations in Columbia. How do you propose the city deals with that?
You know, I have only, you know more about the Brandon Coleman death than I do. I have to say this, I did meet his stepfather, and he's a very dignified, articulate man who was feeling pain. I met him at a welcoming I was doing for a statewide convention of Masons. This is a terrible situation at all levels. Any death is terrible. It's destroyed this family. It's really destroyed two families. It's a law enforcement and prosecutorial issue right now. It is my understanding that the Columbia Police Department has completed its investigation and has turned the investigation over to the prosecuting attorney. And not a lawyer, but it seems to me that the prosecuting attorney can either file charges or have a grand jury, and I don't want to say any more because that's all I know. But it is still in the legal process. It's a terrible situation at all levels, just an absolutely terrible situation, and that's all I can say about that. Yes?
But what about the race relations aspect of that? What do you think the situation is in Columbia and how do you think?
Well, race relations are always a problem, are always an issue. And, you know, one of the reasons to have substantial African-American representation on the anti-violence task force is we need their engagement, we need their role modeling, we need their mentoring, we need their input. And, you know, for example, race relations are impacted by police policies. I mean, widely known issues about profiling. More blacks are pulled over for traffic stops than non-blacks. It's complicated because New York City has had a stop and frisk program for a few years where if there's a crime, they're going to stop every black male on the street and frisk them. And there's blowback on that from the ACLU. Crime rates have dropped in New York. Again, that's part of the conversation. It's part of the discussion. And I think their input is extremely important here because we have a high-risk population. We know who it is, and they need to be engaged. The leaders throughout the community, but in that community, need to be engaged, need to be represented, and they need to be empowered. And that's the intent of this task force. Yes?
If the proposed property tax eventually becomes reality, how soon will we see those 35 officers on the street?
Well, you have to collect the money, right? I don't know how long that takes. A few months. You have to train officers. How long? 6 months?
Got close to a year out.
Yeah, so, you know, if we pass that revenue increase in November, it may be 2014 before those officers are on the street. We have to be realistic. You know, we have to recruit them and we have to train them because we have a record of very talented police officers. If you look at the Anderson report, they talk about the level of education, level of commitment. So at the rank and file level, we have great personnel in the police department. We just don't have enough of them. Yes?
What chance do you believe a property tax increase has of getting passed?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, if you believe, as I do, that we have a crime problem in Columbia, and if you believe, as I do, that we don't have enough police officers, I can come to no other conclusion, you know, to say that Columbia needs to do this. We need to step up. Mr. Perry.
Mr. Mayor, a couple of years ago, the city council tried to give the police chief a couple of new officers, but he pushed back and said, I'd rather have a lawyer, an administrative position. And I guess my question for you is right now, I'm told there are 16 or 17 open positions on the police department. What guarantee can you give the citizens, you or the city manager, that if you have the ability to hire 35 more cops, that those will be cops that are on the streets fighting crime versus administrative positions? What kind of provision can you make?
You know, all I can say is this. We need cops on the street. I expect the city manager to put them on the street. And the city manager likes Columbia. And he has two kids to put through college. So I expect that to happen. Yes?
In the meantime, while we wait for these cops for the next year or so, we're having shots fired incidents every 6 days. What are we going to do?
Well, you know, sadly, one of the things we do is arrest them. And, you know, most of them have been arrested. And, again, as I showed you before, every community in the United States is asking that question. And the issues behind crime are broad, diverse, they're social, they're secular issues, and there are a lot of people getting PhDs in criminal justice right now as they try to answer those questions. Yes, James.
Number one, the CARE program, you made a comment that it's for the underprivileged. That's not so, okay? I was one of those kids, so I wanted to clear that up. I have to start the CARE program. Number two, we talked about the county. What part will the county, because it takes all of us together. So what is your proposal for the county to really jump in and get involved also?
Well, the county, you know, ground level, I'm told that there is a fairly high amount of cooperation between the deputies and the Columbia Police Department. I mean, this is secondhand information. You know, I'm not in a position to... Pardon me? Well, County Commission, I would like to ask the County Commission to fix this problem, but the County Commission correctly reminds me that the Boone County Sheriff is a solely elected official of Boone County and is responsible to the citizens of Boone County and not to him. Unless you would like to change that, you may be my guest.
I'm here on behalf of the county as presiding commissioner to show our active support for the mayor in this endeavor. And I agree with him completely. We need we have a lot of joint projects underway. We have a lot of things that need to be done for all the citizens of the county. Of course, the city is a part of the county, and as a chief law enforcement officer, the sheriff has a right to be concerned about safety when he sees something that he believes should be changed. And I think it's important to point out that over the last two nights, a joint enforcement group of state, federal, and local law enforcement officers, including Boone County and the police department, have undertaken a proactive position to, and they've arrested a lot of people and have gone forward with what the sheriff has been recommending. So it takes two people to cooperate, and you know, without saying any more than that, I think that the sheriff has proven his efforts in that regard by cooperating with all state, local law enforcement officials in the past and continues to do so. And particularly, if you ask sheriff's departments or other cities around central Missouri, you'll find that he's the most collaborative guy around. And I fully support him and believe that he is one of the best sheriffs in the state, if not the best. But as a county, to the extent that I have a role in it, I assure you that we are supportive of all efforts to work together with the city, and we will continue to do that. So let's see what we can do.
Thank you, Dan. A couple more questions? Yes.
Turnover seems like it would be a very expensive proposition in the police department. You spend a lot of money training officers and then experienced officers leave. Are there any retention programs in place to keep experienced officers on the force?
I would have to refer that to the city manager and to the chief of police. I would certainly hope so. It costs a lot of money to train a police officer. We have a young police force. You know, the retirement age, they can retire in 20 years. And, you know, I think you really don't want 66-year-old overweight police officers, you know, policing your community. You want young, fit, active people. And so turnover is a fact of life. We'd like to retain them as long as we can, but we have to be realistic also. Yes?
Mr. Mayor, when I look at the three options there, A, B, and C, are all those mutually exclusive? So, for example, reprioritizing, we kind of cruised through that pretty quickly, but is there an opportunity to do both B and C in this situation?
Well, for me, that there's a little bit of A in that too, in that every year during budget, we try to squeeze the budget. We try to squeeze every amount of every dollar we can out of there. And now, in my former life, this gets down to philosophies about budgeting. I believe there are always savings to be found, and I compliment the city manager on squeezing the budget last year and coming up with $1.9 million surplus. I believe that potential is there every year. I believe there's always opportunity for increasing productivity. I believe there's always an opportunity to save money. And, you know, city manager is proposing a balanced budget. I think he could come out with $1 million surplus this next year if we you know, that will be my challenge to him. I don't think that ever quits, because every dollar we save is a dollar we can move forward in operations. And it kind of lends itself to a strategy that we call incentive-based budgeting. You know, in the private sector, if you've got a company and you got 10 employees and you figure out you can save $5,000 on a coffee machine, you're going to save $5,000 on a coffee machine. That's money in your pocket. In government or in some large organizations, that gets lost, and people don't care. You know, that's in the private sector, too. So if you have a $1.6 million budget, your division, you're really not under any incentive to spend $1.5. Matter of fact, you really don't want to spend $1.5 because you're worried next year you'll only get $1.5 million. So your incentive is to spend every dollar. So the incentive-based budgeting works like this. If you can spend $1.5 million, you can save $100,000. We'll give you an extra $50 next year. We get to keep half of it. I mean, it's sort of the deal. But we need to create an incentive to drive savings throughout the city. That may mean waiting a year on a little Dave Ramsey with buying cars, you know, a little deferring maintenance that you can. I mean, there's a point where that becomes counterproductive. But it may mean looking at operations. Do you need that many people in that operation? I'm going to throw, I mean, the city manager toyed with the number of inspectors we have. You know, any way we can save money, like I said before, every $100,000 we save in our budget is one more police officer. Steve.
You make a lot of good points, Mayor. Number four, what I want to focus on, you're basically boiling this down to we need more money because we need more officers on the beat.
Yes.
Which is one strategy. What about the so-called toxic culture that has plagued Columbia Police Department for some time? There's a report a couple years ago. There's reasonable people that get the credit to Chief Burton for making some headway in this regard, but talking to police officers, others in the community, the toxic culture continues. And to what degree is the ineffectiveness of Columbia Police Department, although there's, I can say there's a lot of good officers, they're doing good things, they've got problems, but organizationally, officers that want to do the right thing, police chief, he wants to be effective, what's holding back this effectiveness of the police department by this toxic culture and the organizational structure there? The status is this.
We have a 14-point roadmap. Change is underway. Change is always inevitable, but things are changing. The city manager is expected to fulfill those changes, and he expects the police chief to complete those changes too. And there have been a lot of changes. Change is difficult. Change always meets resistance, but I am confident in the direction charted by the city manager, and I think that. You know, I've told the city manager this, that there's three things I want to see. One is I want to see lower crime rates. Well, you know, it's a perspective deal. You can draw your own conclusion from the numbers, but I want to see lower crime rates. The second thing I want to see is higher citizen satisfaction. We do surveys, you know, we're going to do them every year. I'd like to see them better with the Columbia Police Department. I want to see the satisfaction of the citizens of Columbia with the Columbia Police Department at or above the regional and national average. We're not there yet. And that's an expectation of mine. And the third expectation I have is I want to see employee engagement, morale improve. Those are my expectations of the city manager, and those will be his expectations of the police chief. And we're going to make that happen. I mean, it's just we have no choice but to make that happen. You know, the problem with sunsetting that is you assume that we're going to solve the problem in the 20 years we have it. And given the history of the human condition, you know, it's not going to happen. I mean, every society in perpetuity will have to deal with evil, we'll have to deal with sociopathic personalities, we'll have to deal with theft, we'll have to deal with violence. I mean, look, I won't be here in 20 years, but if we solve the problem in 20 years, maybe we can repeal the tax. I don't see that happening. So I see this as an ongoing funding for the Columbia Police Department. One more question. Yes.
What about in terms of just the general buildings you have? You have 35 to police officers. Do you have the physical space for those officers?
That is an issue that the city manager and the chief of police will address, and they'll bring it to us. All right, thank you very much.